For years ago, Mary and I were faced with a very significant decision as to whether or not we should leave the career that I had in the military and go full-time into Christian work with the Navigators. Now, this was not something that developed just overnight. It wasn't something that just happened to come up, and on the spur of the moment, we felt that God was in some mysterious way leading us. But over the years, we could see how God had gradually been preparing us for this particular time. But of course, you can see that a little bit by hindsight. I remember when we first started considering it, there was a real question of whether or not this was how God would lead us and whether or not we ought to leave a career. Because for years, I had had a deep conviction that a person in a vocational secular job can have as much ministry and as much impact as anyone who is full-time in, so to speak, full-time in Christian work. And in fact, as others have shared, and I'm sure you've heard Pastor Tucker share, that the term full-time Christian work, or something that is different than anybody being in Christian work no matter what they are doing, whether that is just not a real concept in the Bible. And I shared with you at the beginning of these sessions that we've had together, that there is no such thing as a secular job. But as we began struggling and thinking, there were a lot of decisions that we personally had to make. And it was an interesting process, because as I considered this, we would write down all the pros and the cons and try and balance them out. And there was no clear balancing. In other words, one didn't just weight down the other and say, that's obviously it, that I had to leave my career in the Air Force and go into vocational Christian work. And so we were left to a matter of having to pray and specifically get God's direction for our lives. There was a matter of fear, and I think all of our parts, you know, we were going from a very secure situation to one which didn't have quite the same security from a human sense, in that the Navigators is a faith mission where you do not know what the income will be. People simply give. There were the aspect that I wonder if I really can do full-time what I have been doing on a part-time basis. You know, it's a little different having a ministry sort of on a gratis basis where no one, so to speak, fires you if you don't do the job well, to changing to doing something on a full-time basis where you really are required to do something well and right, and that is your job. So one night in, I believe it was May of about 1972, I got a part in a motel here in Colorado Springs, and began to pray, and I spent 2 days just looking at the Word, looking at the circumstances, looking at how God had led and blessed in my particular life and our lives together, and tried to discern what God wanted us to do. I spent a great deal of time in the Scripture and writing things down, compiling counsel that others had given, and still there was not that clarion click that you ought to do it. You know, that it was just obvious. And so what it turned out was that about midnight, on the second night, I was praying, and I, on the basis of Romans 12, 1 and 2, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. I told God that I felt that I ought to make myself available for that ministry, and had great peace about it. And it was interesting to us that it was a step of faith. And there were still several things that God had to do to open the doors further. I had to have my resignation accepted. I still had a year and a half left on our commitment. And there were just a number of other things that we had prayed. And one of those was that Mary individually would get leading from God, and that the children would sense that this was the right thing to do, though we did not depend on them to make any decision for us personally. Well, in a couple months, Mary got similar leading from the Lord, and we really felt that God was definitely giving us a clear go-ahead to leave a career and go into vocational Christian ministry. Now, we have found in looking back that God very clearly led. There's no regret whatsoever. And I would urge you to seriously consider, even as we go through this lesson today, if God might be leading you. I read in the little missionary journal, saw a picture of the wife of a former pastor of ours. The pastor is now, her husband had passed away, and here she was down on the mission field on a short-term mission assignment. She was probably in her 60s. But you know, there are some other sides of the coin. There are many, many pastors and missionaries who have left the ministry. They have gone into it on the basis of perhaps some emotional situation, or that they just came from an environment where if you did not do that, you were somewhat unspiritual, and it just was kind of the thing to do. And they got into the middle of it and either found that they were not prepared, not trained, not called, or that they simply could not do the ministry, or were very, very unhappy in the midst of the ministry. And if you look through the roles of the graduates of even most of our evangelical seminaries, you will find that many of those people are not today where they began in the Christian ministry. Now, that's not necessarily bad. But you see, it's getting to a point where the return time for our missionaries, or rather the staying time on the field, is somewhere in the neighborhood of 9 years. And it used to be a lifetime. And there are a lot of strains and stresses. So today I felt that in the context of work, it would be wise for us to try to get a picture of what vocational Christian work is. And one section that you note on your outline is some of the myths of vocational Christian work. First of all, let's do some definition. And you're going to have to do without the overhead today, since I don't even have any blanks here in this particular folder, so you're going to have to be a good note taker today. The first definition of vocational Christian work is what I call a direct ministry. That would be a ministry like pastors, Christian education, leaders, youth ministers, missionaries who are out in church planting, those who would be in a what we would somewhat refer to as a frontline ministry, a direct people-oriented ministry where they are confronting either the lost or believers in some type of direct evangelism, teaching, and so forth. You understand what I mean by that? A direct ministry. The second kind of ministry is that is service or support ministries. This would be secretaries on the mission field, perhaps some language specialists, those who maintain the trucks or tractors on a mission station. Or I had a letter from a fellow that's going to be teaching agriculture, a fellow that used to be on the NAV staff, or any of just a multitude of functions. And in fact, there are more of those that are available and go unfilled than there are of the direct ministry type. And so it is very clear that most of us could fit into some kind of vocational Christian ministry if God were to call. It may not be what your classical definition is. It may be short term. It may be in a serving area. It may be in a repair capacity. It may be in a printing capacity. All kinds of things. So we have direct and then support. Then there are two categories of missionaries. One is foreign missionaries. Now, those are the ones that most of us generally think about as being missionaries. Those who serve outside their own country. The second kind is ones who would be home missionaries or home service. Now, we don't frequently call those missionaries, but in a real sense, they are many of them. I have a friend that works over in Utah that is a very, very difficult ministry in ministering there in a Mormon context. There are other friends of ours who work on a Navajo reservation in terms of home missions. There are others who are in a very clear sense missionaries who are going out and planting new churches in the United States. And so we have these various definitions of missionaries and mission operations. Now let me get into the idea of some myths of vocational Christian work. Because I honestly think that there are a number of misconceptions that most of us carry in our minds. Yes? That would be very helpful if you know where some is, Bob. I do have my pencil. And so that would that'd be good. It'll help me remember some of these that I've mentioned. Okay, the first myth of vocational Christian work is that Christian work is easy. Now, most pastors that I know and most missionaries put in 50 to 70 to 80 to 90 hours a week, and most people don't know what they really do. I mean, it's a little difficult for a layman to realize when a person does not punch a clock how they could possibly be motivated to put in that much time. But you will find that the greatest pressures in the ministry are people. How do you say no when someone says, my marriage is falling apart and I do need to see you, and I know it's Saturday afternoon, or I know it's Sunday afternoon, or I know it's your day off, but I really need help? Do you say no? Not many do. How do you turn someone down when they really do need help? And then how do you cope with the pressure that is within you that says, nobody is checking up on me, and so therefore I have to produce, and I have to give myself to this more fully? And most missionaries that I know, most full-time workers, vocational Christian workers, actually are driven inwardly, probably far beyond what they ought to expend themselves physically and by health and in sacrificing their families and many other things. And of course, it is not easy if you're on a foreign field in many cases, living in a very adverse environment, and there are a number of things like that. The second myth of vocational Christian work is that it will be a more spiritual environment. Now, those of you who have worked in any kind of a mission organization know that whether you are full-time or not, that you do tend to sin occasionally. That things do tend to be said that were not particularly right. And that there are conflicts. And in fact, there are unspiritual methods in the context. In the church, we're constantly trying to figure out what is honest. What is a right thing to do? What ought we not to do? What is not right to do, for instance, in regard to selling the bonds? Thank you, Bob. And I think there are just many things that we can look at to try and see now how can I resolve the conflict? See, I know no Christian worker who is not always in the midst of several situations of high levels of conflict. And do you know why? One of the reasons is that when you are confronting people with their need, they don't like to hear it. And you're always going to offend somebody. When you are serving any kind of a constituency of anything over two, you are going to do something that someone doesn't like. And there's going to be something that you say that is misunderstood. And there will be times where you must stand for your own convictions, and people simply are not going to like it. And I have encountered that. I've encountered that with staff. I've encountered it with the people I'm working with in a local ministry. And so, now one of the problems is this. When you are working in a, quote, Christian environment, your expectation is higher. You see what I mean? The expectation is, well, they ought to act differently. And now if that same person were out in a secular job and they did that, and you didn't happen to know that they were a Christian, you'd say, well, that's just the way it is. You know, it's a dog-eat-dog, cutthroat world. And you just sort of pass it off. And I found that in a Christian context, that conflict is one of the more difficult things to justify. And I think it's important to understand that conflict is not wrong. Conflict is a norm of life. And conflict is something that you need to learn to live with. And you need to understand that when you take a vote, there sometimes may be some no votes. And that's fine. That is not a problem. There is nothing in the Bible that tells that you have to have a 25 to nothing vote on some particular issue. That is, everybody has to be in agreement. You see, spiritual leadership involves being in the midst of conflict and perhaps not being understood. And so to say that there will be a more spiritual environment is not necessarily true in the Christian world. Okay, now you'll have to help me keep up here. What was the first item was? Okay, the idea that it is easy, that is a myth. I'll put this because it is not easy. The second is more spiritual. Okay, the third one that I'd like to share with you is that there will be sacrifice. Pardon me? That's a myth. Okay, now, let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question. Is that F-I? That's why I prepare these ahead of time. No, I did it again. Erase this from the tape, Fred. How's that? Boy, three tries, you know, and you get it yet. Okay. Okay, now, let me ask you a question. Is it a sacrifice to be in God's will? There is no way. There is no way under creation that by doing God's will, it is a sacrifice. You see, if God leads you, that is the only place in which you will be happy. See, some of you may be absolutely miserable where you are, and that's a sacrifice to be miserable. You know, to be out of God's will is always a problem, and it will give you difficulties. Now, by that, I do not mean that there will not be in the world's eyes certain sacrifice of monetary benefits, perhaps position. You know, who is to say that one going to a tribe in Brazil and having to perhaps sacrifice your health, the children have to be schooled elsewhere, certainly we would view that from a world's viewpoint as a sacrifice, but not from God's viewpoint. See, if God calls, then that is the ministry to which God has called you. And if you look at it on a financial basis, there is nothing in Scripture which teaches that a layman, a person who is not in vocational Christian work, has the right to live higher than one who is not. There was once a missionary who was visiting a rather well-to-do family. As I recall, it was back in the Midwest. And this lady was a very sharp dresser. And so, you know, she was very proud of her home and all that she had. And so she gave a tour of that home. And she went around and showed this wonderful room and this huge rec room and this nice furniture and that. And then along the line and says, but of course you should never expect this because you're in the ministry and others support you. I wonder if that is really the way God intended. I wonder if all of us ought not on a financial basis to sacrifice and to give and to give of ourselves, to give of that which we have. I think I sense in the Christian world, I even sense it among our navigator staff, that there is the idea that one ought to somehow be masochistic in the lifestyle in order to demonstrate that one is in Christian work. Now, I don't believe that we should particularly live high by any means at all, but I do not believe that we ought to go with the old adage where the deacon prays and he says, Lord, keep our pastor poor and humble. You keep him humble, we'll keep him poor. Yeah, I don't believe that. I think that the Scriptures teach that the laborer is worthy of his hire, and that those of us who are involved with people who have given themselves to this, we ought to check and find out what it is that the needs are. And we ought to be sensitive, just as we ought to be sensitive to each other. We have a very odd system that we operate under in the Christian world, and we set a series of standards of how one person ought to live and how we ought to live. And of course, it will be that there will be others who will live better than you may. And some of you may have jobs that simply do not provide very well. I do not think we have the right to say everybody must live by my lifestyle. But we have to have everyone to gauge how God is leading them personally in their living. But we ought not to be in the position of determining another person's lifestyle, because they have to live before God in that situation. Bill?
Do you think that some missionaries might have put on a public image of that type, saying, I'm sacrificing
it? The question is, do some missionaries put on a public image of that? I haven't really seen that personally, Bill. Well, in certain liberal circles where missions are, a missionary maybe just simply on a salary, and there are instances overseas where there are probably missionaries living far better than almost anyone else. Now, we go through that struggle personally when we send our NAB missionaries overseas. For one thing, when you send them into Asia, it's very, very difficult for the entire family to adjust to that lifestyle. I was in a home in Indonesia, which turned out to be a very large home. But the wife was just tremendously frazzled in a sense that because you could do nothing but prepare it totally from scratch. I mean, you just couldn't go out and buy pizza mix. You just couldn't go out and buy, certain of the basic elements. And I know Mary and I, for that particular couple, have actually sent out, Mary? Things like Kool-Aid and gelatin and cereal. You can't get cereal, and just various things like that, that was really a treat for certain of the kids because they simply could not get it. And living takes a tremendous amount of time and physical energy. Now, I think it probably happens, Bill, but I don't really feel that it happens to any great extent in our evangelical circles. That would be my guess from what I've seen. Any other questions or thought on this at the moment? Yes?
Yes, I would like to ask, what about the people you're living with?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let's see. They're on a much lower scale than we are. Where are we to live there? And what he said about missionaries giving up, we do see that on the foreign field where missionaries feel they do have to sacrifice, so to speak, and sometimes they overdo it.
Yes.
But I don't think that's good. It's very difficult, I think, to draw a line to what you have and what you shouldn't have.
Oh, it's extremely difficult. It's almost an issue of conscience. And see, we've encountered that many times, especially in Asia, not so much in Europe, but in Asia and in Brazil and various other places. And the fact is that in some circumstance, a missionary would die a very quick death living exactly like those who were there. But we have most missions would, at least we are doing this, trying to get the people to year by year to slightly lower their standard of living. We know when they first go there that the shock is so severe of going from our rather normal standard of living to what those about them. And there's a great deal of conflict occasionally because they do live better and they have more resources than those to whom they're ministering. Yes, that is correct.
When I was with the Eskimo, they used to say, you've got no stomach for this, and they were right. I could eat over here.
Yeah.
And they expected me to have peanut butter when they just
right. Go. Yes, Marcia?
I know of a situation where two missionaries were both in the ministry with a missionary in Japan, had a bad disagreement over this, and one fellow was ministering in Tokyo.
Right. Right. Yes, that's right. In fact, we've had that on our own staff. We, on our own navigator staff overseas, we've had some rather lengthy discussions on lifestyle. Very definitely, yes.
Have you written Oh, yeah. Realize
that
that is something unnecessary, really.
Right. All, for... Right, and that's very common. Like in this Indonesian home, they had to have a maid. However, they had to go through them. You know, there was dishonesty. And the day I was there, it was a great trauma in that the maid, the lady that they had helping them in the home, had to be released because she had stolen. Yeah. Yeah. Doris? Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's. Yeah. That's right. Okay, let me go on here for just a moment and discuss. Now, this is a very crucial issue, what I've just talked to you about. And just in a parenthetical thing, I would really like us as a body here to seriously give some consideration to our attitudes. I almost wish I were back in my secular day so I could speak a little more forthrightly, because I don't want to speak for myself personally. But I really think that we do a great deal of segregation in our minds between those who are in the, quote, clergy and those in the laity, especially because we put people under such a microscope on almost everything that they do. And somehow we don't realize that we just aren't under that same kind of scrutiny. And we don't end up in the same kind of public exposure. And especially as it relates to a wife. For instance, I think it's very important to realize, for instance, when a pastor comes, that you're hiring him, you're not hiring his wife. And they will have different personalities, and they will, and their children. You're not hiring their children. They will get, those kids will get in as much trouble as anybody else. They'll have the same difficulties that you have, and the same requirements are going to, you know, to have to be there. Okay. You can't read that what I wrote, but I'll redo it when I get there. Okay. First of all, or fourthly, there is some feeling that to go into Christian work that one must have some sort of a mysterious call. Just this morning I picked up a little booklet, and and I was reading about a missionary who had returned and describing the point at which they were called to full-time Christian work. It was in a very emotional meeting, and they went forward and wept and felt that God was calling them. Now, God can use that. But also God may not use it. I recall one instance where a pastor that I had, who was very, very missions-minded, was constantly making an invitation for dedication to full-time Christian service. And so afterwards, one Sunday evening, I went and had a chat, and I said, you know, I'm not sure this is really right. For one thing, the invitation is unclear. And I'm not sure people really understand, but yet it's given in such a way that you almost feel unspiritual or dirty if you do not respond. Should I not be available? See, and it produces an emotional thing on us. And I feel that much of missions, we have put this calling at a point in time. And I think there is much more to this than just simply a feeling that God wants you somewhere, or some guilt conviction that God is calling you because of something that you are not doing. I personally believe that there are a number of issues that you need to consider in terms of being called into some kind of vocational ministry. The utmost of which is, what fruit have you seen in your life? You know, what could God use you for? Are you in the Word? Do you meet the qualifications of an elder? And I believe that God can very gradually be making you aware. Now, I understand it may be a trauma because we're scared. I think I have to admit that when I was young and in high school and college, I had a fear that God would somehow, if I went to Christian service, would call me to serve in some forgotten place and I really didn't want to do it. But that resulted from my lack of understanding of what God was about and what God was wanting to do in my life. Now, I believe we ought to have missions conference. I believe the need needs to get presented, and I want to present some of that need to you today. But I do not believe that we have to think of some mysterious call. See, I do not personally feel I had that, and I know others. But in an evaluation of gifts, the fruit, and an opportunity, and many other things, it started lining up that God wanted us to make a change. Now, I believe for young people that God can lead them. And I believe God can very readily give them a call at a point in time. But you see, when you make that initial emotional call, then you've got to see some demonstration that that's what God really wants done in your life. For a person to be called to the pastorate who cannot speak very well at all, I think is rather an anomaly. But yet it's not an uncommon thing. For one to be called to be a missionary who has never led a person to Christ here, I think that is somewhat presumptuous on God. For one to be called to plant churches in some circumstances overseas who has never really had a church involvement here that has been successful and knows a little bit about what the situation is, it probably is unrealistic. Now let me go to the next one. There is a thought, and I need to say this more fully, that if I go into vocational Christian work, my gifts will be used more fully. Okay, now just think about that for a moment. Now, don't think about it emotionally. Think about whether that is scriptural. Are there any of the gifts that, for instance, are limited to a vocational Christian work? How about the pastoral gift? Is that limited to those in full-time work? Is it? It really isn't, is it? Because you see, the elder concept is basically to be pastors. Okay, now, I think in considering your gifts, I believe that God can use your gifts anywhere. But let me just discuss a little bit what I mean by gifts. There are certain things that we need to understand. And that is, we need to understand the extent and capacity. I see I've got that later on. Let me talk about that later here in the outline. I'll come back to that near the end of our time together. Let me go to another issue relating to this. You can't read that, but that says requirements. Okay, now, do you understand the requirements for full-time Christian work? It is the same requirement as is in 1 Timothy 3 and is it Titus 1 or Titus 3? Or Titus 2? Well, anyhow, Titus, the list of qualifications for one who is to be an elder and one who is to be used by God. Now, I don't believe we ought to consider a vocational ministry if we do not meet those qualifications relating to the family, your own spiritual life, your own walk with God. And so I think we have to see that this is something that we must meet. Now, a seventh area is the concept, the myth, that there is less pressure to produce. That's an interesting one, isn't it? Man, I want to get out of that dog-eat-dog world. I have to sell so much. All I have to do is kind of be there and, you know, it'll keep coming in. Sort of like being on retirement. Brother, let me tell you, if you knew for almost all missionaries, no matter how isolated, the scrutiny that is made of their ministries and the inner compulsion to produce in some way, perhaps bad, perhaps wrong. Because you see, how do you judge, for instance, a church? Well, you look at numbers or members or meetings or whether it's growing or something like that. And you know, there are a number of churches where none of those apply. For instance, Mary's father was a pastor for many, many years in very small rural communities. It's rare, I think maybe one time that I recall he was actually fully supported by the congregation. And there were just tremendous pressures, and you just did not see that kind of growth. And you saw people who'd been in an environment for year after year after year, and nobody knew ever moved into the community, and they're hardened to the gospel. Should we not have a church in those locales? Should we always have a super church? Probably not. I don't really see that that's particularly scriptural. I think in a location like we are, considering the circumstance and surroundings, if we weren't growing, there would probably be something wrong. But for every person that I know who is in a vocational Christian ministry, whether it be in a support or a direct function, there are measures that some people apply to how they are doing. Isn't that not correct? For instance, I'll bet every one of you, when Pastor Tucker is not preaching, thinks, well, you know, now is that as good? Do you understand what I mean? So you put a measure on how people function. And most of us put different measures on different people, and the same person is measured in different ways by different ones. Now, who's he going to follow? Really? See, in my job with the navigators is to, part of it is to evaluate the ministries out in the field. Now, that's very hard, because sometimes I have to say, hey, you're not going in the right direction, and you ought to change this. So they get evaluated by me. Then they have their group who has a certain expectation of them. And they get torn between what they feel is right and what they ought to do and what people expect of them. And so to say that there is less pressure to produce is not necessarily true. Now, I think there are a couple more that I did not bring back to my mind, and I'll try and mention them to you later, but let me go on for just a moment. I'd like you to take your Bible for just a moment and turn to Matthew. Matthew chapter 9. Verse 35. And Jesus was going about all the cities and the villages, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom, and healing every kind of disease and every kind of sickness. And seeing the multitudes, he felt compassion for them, because they were distressed and downcast like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, the harvest is plenteous, but the workers are few. Therefore beseech the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into his harvest. Folks, in spite of all these things that could be misconceptions on the aspect of a vocational Christian ministry, the need is fantastic. There are churches that are going unfilled. There are mission fields that simply are unmanned. There are places that are closing up, and the need is urgent. But the need is not urgent in the sense that God needs you. See, God doesn't need anybody. And in fact, let me just mention that. That reminded me of the one other myth, is that a need constitutes a call. See, there are more needs than any of us will ever be able to fulfill. But I guarantee you that God's needs will be met. You see, I remember one time, this is a very minor example, but I was in a church, and it was a small, struggling church. We began meeting in the Farm Bureau building. And, you know, and then went into a church and all of this. And so they really didn't have a lot of things. And I had some musical ability. So they came to me and said, well, Jerry, would you lead the choir? Well, I was working on my PhD. I was leading a ministry on the campus. And I just simply did. We just did not have much time. And so I said, well, I really doubt it, but I will pray about it. So I prayed about it and said, well, I'm sorry. I really don't feel God is leading me to that. And he said, well, gee, there's a need, and you're the only one in church that can possibly do it. And I said, well, I'm sorry. What that probably means then is that God is leading us to not have a choir. You know what happened? The pastor led the choir, which I think was a wrong move, because that's the last thing he needed to do. He happened to have musical ability. You see, a need does not necessarily constitute a call. And a motivation on a basis that there is such need is not right. But the motivation to the knowledge that there is a need is something that must be part of the facts in our system. And I see here that Jesus felt compassion for them because they were distressed and downcast, like sheep without a shepherd. And he says, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers... Interesting word, workers. How do you know a worker when you see one?
He's working.
He's working. Isn't that an amazing thing? A worker is doing something. How do you recognize a worker or a laborer in the Christian community? Is it meeting all the meetings? No. This person is generally out doing precisely what he would do on the mission field. Leading people to Christ, helping people grow, or whatever it may be. Now, I would like to challenge you today to seriously consider whether or not God may lead you personally to some kind of a vocational ministry at some point in your life. But let me mention to you that God needs people who are committed. First step. Secondly, he needs people who are able. That is, there is a certain measure of ability that you have that has been clearly demonstrated in your life. And thirdly, that you are trained. It appalls me, I guess I'll go ahead and say it, at the lack of training that some people come to a ministry with. One pastor I had went back and told his seminary professor, quote, "You didn't teach me anything about how to pastor a church," close quote. One of the finer seminaries in the country, by the way. One of the most fundamental, not Dallas, Nancy. But it's true, in many cases, that for which we are to be being prepared, we may not be getting the right kind of training or the apprenticeship, whatever it may be. So committed, and that you have the ability, and that you have the training to do it. And that may mean you'll have to get some training. When Terry Taylor came with the Navigators and left his optometry practice, he had to take about 3 years and not be an optometry just to get trained so that he could do the work of the ministry. Now, that was kind of hard because there was that time of sort of being in limbo. We've got another man here in Colorado Springs who is a seminary graduate, but who has not had any experience out in a college type of ministry. He has been in the process for 2 years before he had his own ministry and working at a job that certainly he was not necessarily trained for, preparing for that time so that he could get the practical training aspect of it. Yes? Yes, but it still is somewhat on an academic basis. She's asking about a place like Moody Bible Institute, an excellent institution. Just categorizing, if one were going to the pastorate, I'd go to a seminary. If one were going overseas and not in a teaching ministry like Gary Deweese did, then I would probably recommend, after a liberal arts college, some kind of a Bible school type of training. And I think it prepares them fairly well for certain ministries overseas. But I still look and say now, in practical sense, if they have not been leading people to Christ, if they have not been involved in some practical work, and boy, and I must say, the seminaries and the Bible schools desperately try to do this. Dallas and others have the practicum programs, get out and get in it, and they all know it. But somehow, when a person is getting a grade at an end of the semester, it does not particularly... You know, the priority list gets switched around. President Rademacher of Western Baptist Seminary, in one of his courses, had a requirement that in order to even get a grade and pass the course, you had to lead someone to Christ and follow them up. And people dropped from the course like flies. Because that was a pretty tough requirement. You had all year to do it. Now, you see what I mean? Putting the practical and the theoretical together is a key. Now, there are many of you who have not had that kind of training. You say, well, man, I have to go 4 years to seminary in this. No, not necessarily. If you have been a student of the Word, I think that you could be prepared in a relatively short time. Or you may have an ability that would be of tremendous use on the mission field, even for a short period of time. Okay?
You're speaking of undergraduate work and seminary.
That's correct. Yeah. Going into the graduate seminary. Right. And by the way, Columbia Bible College, Multnomah School of Bible, and others have specific graduate programs for non-Bible school seminary graduates to have sort of a year and a half program to just sort of get them up to speed in terms of their training and some of the biblical background, history, and various things like that. So there's some good opportunities, and most missions will require that you take at least that. Okay, let me go on now to some guidelines for considering vocational Christian work. First of all, the scriptural qualifications, which I have already addressed. The second thing is discerning your own personal gifts and abilities. Now, in terms of discerning your own gifts and abilities, I think the best way is to see the fruit. Now, what we heard this morning, or you will hear if you're heading out to church now on gifts, is a very good admonition. You don't sit around waiting to see what your, quote, gift is. Because I have some reservations that if you do that, you may not discover any gift. I mean, everybody is supposed to evangelize, everybody's supposed to teach, everybody's supposed to pastor, and, you know, whether you've got the gift or not, to have an involvement in people's lives. But I'd like to comment on the extent and capacity of spiritual gifts. You see, you may have the gift of evangelism, but you may not be a Billy Graham, right? You may have the gift of teaching, but you're not a Howie Hendricks or a Mike Tucker. So you may have the gift of leadership, but yet it's with 3 or 4 and not 100. Do you see what I mean in the various gifts? There are capacities and extent of gifts. How, to what extent do you have a particular gift? And I think God, in terms of our abilities and training, very unusually gifts certain people in certain areas. And I also believe that a lot of things that you may not feel that you are gifted in, you can be trained in. So it's not just that you have or don't have a particular gift. You need to see the fruit on what it is that that God has done in your life in terms of demonstrating this gift. Now let's talk about some evaluation. Let's presume, in fact, why don't you get in mind for a moment something that you maybe have been impressed that you ought to do at some time or another, maybe in terms of vocational Christian work. Because that's probably the thing you should do as a working in a secular job too. Okay, now, what I would do to try, if I were pursuing this, and this is something that I did when I was leaving the Air Force. Okay, I had the opportunity. I had been asked to consider coming on the full-time staff of the Navigators. So, some of these questions I asked, some I didn't. I'd done before. I would go to somebody. Perhaps, and I would say sometimes even Christians and non-Christians. But primarily Christians, because Psalm 1 said, "Blessed is a man that abides not in the counsel of the ungodly." However, there's some areas that a non-Christian can tell you about that a Christian won't have guts to do it. So, you know, they'll sometimes shoot pretty straight with you, you know, because we think we got to be nice or something. Okay, first of all, I say, what are a few of my strengths? Okay, and all you listen, jot them down. Then I say, now, how do you know? Specifically, where have you seen these strengths? Okay, you'll find that they may not have seen too many. See, it's just a presumption, perhaps from the way you speak or something like that. Okay, then say, what are a few of my weaknesses? Okay, then say, now, if I enter the Christian ministry, what would I do well? What do you think I would do well? We at one time had occasion here in Temple where an individual requested ordination, and we refused to ordain him, even to examine him. And that really created some furor. And the reason was that none of us felt that the person had the gifts to go into the particular ministry that this individual was trying to go into. We had not seen it demonstrated at any point in time, and it was very difficult. Okay, now, what could would I have? This is a key question. Say now, what could I have a difficult time doing? And see, they may say, well, you're going to have a difficult time getting along with people. Or you're going to offend people because you're very abrupt. Or you joke too much and people don't know how to take you. Or you're not doing your job right now well, therefore, do you think you'll really do the other job well? Do you see what I mean? Now, you have to press people to be honest with you. Say, now, listen, I really want your honest input to me. I desperately need it. I'm thinking of making a major change in my life. And then say, now, how do you feel I would do at, and then whatever that thing is you're thinking about doing. Now, I did this, and a very interesting thing happened. Those that I thought would be very much in favor, or at least some of those that I thought would be very much in favor of my getting into the vocational Christian work, had reservations. Two of them on the basis, one of position and the influence that they thought I would have in the military, and the other on the basis of money. I remember a very good friend of mine says, boy, you really need to think about the future. You know, you don't want to just jump off. And his wife was sitting next to him, and she was a missionary who had been over in Pakistan and come back from diabetes. He says, oh, forget it. If God wants him there, he'll provide. And, you know, husband and wife. And then lastly, say, now, what evidence have you actually seen that gives you this feeling? See, how do you feel I would do it this? And then what evidence have you seen? Now, evaluate yourself, too. Be honest. I meant to grab it out of the file this morning, but this must not be my day. I'll probably forget to go to the 11 o'clock service even. I have a big sheaf of yellow paper that I had written almost all my thoughts out on in the process of my making this little change. And I evaluated myself, and have your mate evaluate you. That's very important. They know you better than anyone else. And the last thing to consider is family unity. I think that you need to have your family together when you make a move like this. So let me challenge you personally to pray about whether God might be leading you. But don't do it just blindly because someone says you ought to. And review some of these myths of vocational Christian work and try and get a better conception. I would urge every one of you in this room to grab some person in vocational Christian work, one of the pastors, me, someone, and say, hey, what are some of the problems you encounter? What's it really like? And get some understanding of that.